Hello and welcome to part one of the immune system assessment module. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and my goal today is to help you to understand the immune system from the perspective of evaluating for your clients and patients where some of the dysfunctions may lie and how you can support them and empower them to remove some of those obstacles, restore the balance to their immune system so that they can proceed and increase and improve their health. What we're going to do in this part one, is I'm going to review the immune system components. We're going to look at the different parts of the immune system and how it plays in to creating the response that we desire, and then what can really actually go wrong with the immune system. And then how do we look at the patient? How do we look at the client? How do we ask them the right questions and run the right tests? So this is the initial part, a review of the immune system, and then what kind of things can go wrong and what kind of questions. And in subsequent parts, we'll go into more depth about the various ways that we can test using lab testings and functional analyses to understand what's going on with the client, with their immune system. Before I jump in and begin, I want to make sure that you're aware that the information that I'm presenting today is not intended to replace the information or the relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's not considered medical advice. And I want you to be very careful and very aware when you're working with a client and presenting this information or evaluating where they are, looking for imbalances, that you are neither diagnosing nor treating. You are simply helping them to identify the obstacles to their immune system functioning at its optimal. And then to help them and educate them and empower them to take the steps they need to take in order to bring their immune system into balance and thus increase their vitality and their overall health. So if they're under the care of a doctor, if they're in relationship, they're on any medications, make sure that you make them aware that they should consult their doctor and make sure that what you're teaching them and what changes you've given them to look into making are in alignment with the care that the doctor's providing. So what's your immune system's job? I look at it as the police department and the army of your body. It's there to ward off danger. It's got that shield up. It's always on guard for you. It's waiting. Every time something passes through an opening or a membrane, it's asking the question, is this safe, self, or is this other? That's the first question. Is this self or is this other? If it's self, then it supposedly just doesn't do anything and doesn't try to fight you off. If it's other, then it's going to ask some more questions. Like, is it friendly or is it dangerous? And then based on the answers to that question, we will, bam, wipe them out or bring them into play. So what it is supposed to be protecting us from is not just bacteria and funguses and viruses and molds and yeasts, but other things like food particles, dirt, parasites, environmental toxins. All of these things play in and the immune system tries to fight it off. So your immune system also protects you against free radicals. You've heard of those before. It's called oxidative stress on your tissues. And actually, free radicals, what they do is they oxidize, or what we call rust, your tissues so that free radicals form. And then as more free radicals form, more of your tissues get oxidized. And then your DNA gets damaged because it doesn't have what it takes to repair itself. And then you have damage to cell membranes and oxidized cholesterol and stiff arteries, wrinkles, brain damage. All of that stuff is possible. So within our immune system, there are various pieces and parts that are protecting us. We've got various organs and glands, and then we also have immune barriers, like things that we don't want people to get through, like the skin. We don't want people poking their fingers and getting in our skin. We don't want toxic waste products getting in. We have a barrier on the skin so that if we cut the skin open, we cover it up. So we wait until the immune barrier comes back. So our immune barriers are skin, the intestinal lining, because remember, the intestinal lining is as if it's lining the outside of your body, because it's like a continuation from the outside of your body. And then your lungs, they're constantly breathing in, tasting the environment, as is the blood-brain barrier. So it's really important to bring all these things into balance. And you cannot heal your immune system unless you heal your immune barriers. And the organs and glands that are all part of this whole picture are your thymus, something called your complement system. It's a set of parameters in your blood that help with the immune system, that either support, bring it up or bring it down, depending on what's needed. There's your lymphatic system, which carries the lymph from one part of the body to another. There's your spleen, which recycles old red blood cells, and your bone marrow, which makes new red blood cells, and your white blood cells. And we'll talk about the differentiation between all those white blood cells in a short while. And then, of course, your antibodies. And all of these things make up you. They make up your immune system. So let's just briefly talk about the parts of the immune system before we get into the real tests at hand. So, leukocytes. There's five different types of white blood cells. When you do a CBC, a complete blood count, you do a CBC with differential. And what that means is that you are going to ask for the percent of each of these that's in the particular category. So if 100% is the total, we're saying that somewhere between 20 and 40% would be lymphocytes. And 40 to 60% would be neutrophils. And the rest are just kind of staggered between 7 and 9%. Well, if you add them all up, 7, 10, 11% if you add them all up. Okay, so lymphocytes make antibodies. On the CBC, elevation may mean viral infection. So if you have lower high white blood cells and your lymphocytes are high, then that means that you are either making less neutrophils or you are making less of some of the others. The neutrophils actually are the first line of defense. They have a very short half-life, which is 2 to 3 days, and they should be between 40 and 60% on the differential. Monocytes are your second line of defense, and they're elevated in the recovery phase from 0 to 7% at any point in time. Eosinophils, they're related to parasites and allergies. So anywhere between 0 and 3% is saying there's not much allergy action going on. But if you start to get your eosinophils up higher than that, definitely an indication that something needs to be looked at. And basophils, they're related to histamines and allergies, mast cells and IgE antibodies. And those are a very small percent, just about 1%. So in addition to the lymphocytes and the leukocytes, we have hormones and hormone-like chemicals in our body that have naturally produce anti-inflammatory, so that we're constantly in that state of flux between inflamed, not inflamed, inflamed, not inflamed. The cytokines, these are hormone-like messengers. They're produced by the immune system, but they go out and reach into the endocrine glands. The lymphokines are cytokines that are produced in lymphocytes. Thymosin is actually produced by, like it sounds like, the thymus to encourage more electrolyte production. These are not things that I have ever measured. I just don't get interleukins maybe once or twice I have, but most of this stuff is not stuff that you're going to be seeing on a day-to-day basis and wanting to measure. But I just wanted you to be familiar with the terminology before we move on. At the very bottom, we have our different kinds of white blood cells, basophil, neutrophil, eosinophil, monocyte, T lymphocyte. And this just shows the progression. You start with an immature blood cell and you take it to maturity. So let's talk a little bit about antibodies. You've got classes of antibodies. Remember the globulin as part of the blood? The globulin is what makes immunoglobulins. And immunoglobulins are antibodies. And you have many, many, many of those in your body. And there are different phases. There are different kinds of antibodies. So the IgM and the IgD are actually first-timer antibodies. Like the first time you're exposed to a particular organism, you are going to create IgM and IgD. Next, you'll be creating IgG, and that's the most prevalent. The IgA is in the mucosal surfaces, and the IgE, it's actually more related to intense onset kinds of respiratory or hives or a reaction that's so clear that everybody knows you had that problem. You had a problem with that food. So this is your immune system in action. It's pretty colorful, eh? I don't know that it's that colorful inside of us, but we can pretend. The yellow ball is the virus. So we've got this virus that's coming into the system. And the macrophage, which is the blue kind of looks like a magic carpet, or it looks like it's in the shape of a little Gumby kind of thing, that's going to surround that virus. But it needs help. So it reaches out for the T helper cells, which go and help it to be activated. Okay. It also, the T helper cell will then go to the plasma cells and get the B cells. And then those B cells are what makes antibodies. When you're exposed to something, it's the B cells that remember and they store that. So that if you're exposed to that same thing again, they don't have to mount a whole new response, a new immune response. So that helper T cells will help to get the cytotoxic T cells and B cells out to the place where they need them. You know, come on out, help me get this critter. Let's pull them in. So all the antibodies are then mobilized. So it's like, oh, what's the shape? What do you look like? Oh, okay, I'm going to create a little antibody. And then it creates a memory cell from that. And then that goes and it attacks and we're good to go. You'd see at the end where the little Y's are going onto the little knobs on the virus. That's custom fit, no extra charge, just the way we work. So let's just talk about the typical immune response. First, the invader makes its way in. Then, as we saw in the last picture, the macrophages engulf it. And I like to think about the Pac-Man. One of my mentors or an author said once, the macrophages are like Pac-Man. Or they're an overweight security guard with clubs but no guns. You know, they look like they're going to help, but in reality, they can just knock somebody out. They can't really kill them. So they can soften the blow. They can create these antigen-presenting cells, and they put them on there. And they say, hey, come and get this. Hey, who has a big reserve? Come and get this guy. And then the T helper, it helps to bring what's called the cytotoxic cells, which are the cells that are going to explode with goodness in terms of getting rid of, and it presents that to the antigen presenting cell and also the natural killer cells. So they're all surrounding and swarming so they can destroy the invader. And the T regulatory cells make sure there's enough protective T helper and suppressor. So it's like it's in charge of keeping the balance because we don't want too much T protector. We don't want too much helper. We want to find that happy medium. And of course, like I said before, the B cells are the ones that make the antibodies that memorize the intruder. So next time they catch them quicker.
Now that we've reviewed how the immune system works, we need to look at what can go wrong. And the reason we need to look at what are some of the things that can go wrong is that's when it's going to dictate how we're going to assess what's going to go wrong. So knowing what can go wrong and the mechanisms by which things go wrong is really an effective way for us to look at the immune system and say, okay, now how do I determine for this particular person, this patient, this client, this family member, myself, what's actually going wrong so that we can address the imbalances. So what are some of the ways that the immune system can malfunction that we need to be aware of so that we can help the person to take corrective action? Well, it can be underacting or it can be overacting. Those are the two main ways that the immune system goes wrong. When it's underactive, we're more prone to infections, right? The immune system is not working at its best. So a person that catches every cold that comes along, that is down with the flu on a regular basis, that has infections in various parts of their body, with skin breakouts and infectious processes that happen, those are people who have a low activity of the immune system. So they can't really fight things off as best they can. We can also have people who are immunosuppressed. We hear a lot of that in chronic disease states, like people with AIDS, for example, their immune system is chronically suppressed. And in people who are under treatment for cancer, immune system is immunosuppressed. On the other end of the spectrum, we have a hyperactive immune system. Well, how does that play out? Well, it seems like we have an epidemic of autoimmune diseases, diseases in which the body is attacking itself. That's an immune system gone wrong. Some people call it hyperactive. It's overactive. Some people just call it dysregulated activity. Either way, it's acting and it's overreacting to things that aren't dangerous. Versus in a hypoactive situation, these things are dangerous, these bugs, these bacteria, these viruses, but the immune system isn't mounting a big enough attack. In the opposite, hyperactive, we'd see autoimmune, where the body's actually attacking its own system. Like I said, that's a dysregulated or a confused immune system as well. And we'll talk a little bit more about things like molecular mimicry, that kind of thing. Allergies are another way that the body is hyperreactive. Okay, you go out and you're mowing the grass. The grass isn't going to kill you. The grass isn't dangerous, but the immune system perceives it as if it is and mounts this attack, and the person gets all histamine-related symptoms like drippy eyes and nose and itchy skin, etc. And then we have food allergies. Food allergies are happening more and more in our world. And a lot of the food allergies are caused by a dysregulation in the gut, leaky gut, where the body's allowing these larger than supposed to be molecules to get into the bloodstream, protein in particular, and the body's attacking it as if it's a foreign invader, like a streptococcus or staph or other kinds of infection. So those are the things that we want to look for, and those are the things we want to be able to test for. Some of the testing is going to be good old-fashioned history, and it is said that you can get 90% of what you need by taking a good history. So that's super important to do and to review. The other thing is there's physical exam. It's looking at a person, looking for, you know, what are the rings under the eyes and the various and sundry things physically that show that they might be having an immune system reaction. And then there's testing, there's lab testing, and there's a whole host of different lab tests, and we'll touch upon a bunch of those. Now let's look at where the breakdown is occurring in the immune system. We'll start with looking at the weakening of what's called the immune barriers, the gut lining, the brain, the blood-brain barrier, the skin, and the lungs. These are parts of the body that are supposed to be protecting us from the outside world, right? Even though the gut seems like it's inside, recall that it's actually outside the body, and it's this tube that's protecting the outside world from getting onto the inside world. The gut blood-brain barrier, while that's not protecting us per se from the outside world, it's protecting us from the things that are in the blood, like products that are geared towards going out. You know, they're supposed to be filtered out by the kidneys because they've been cleansed by the liver. Those are things that we don't want to get into the brain. We want to protect the brain, so we have something called the blood-brain barrier. We also have the skin, right? So we don't have the body, the breakdown of the skin so that bugs and bacteria and all that. We have a nice, you know, mucus protection, and we have a microbiome even in our skin. And the lungs, we're breathing things in, the lungs filter, and we only allow in what's supposed to get in an ideal day, right? So let's look at some of these things that will cause the weakening of those immune barriers. One of the top things is vitamin D deficiency. Vitamin D, it turns out, is very important for maintaining the integrity of the gut-brain barrier and the blood-brain barrier especially, but also important in the skin and the lungs. Another thing that can weaken those barriers are blood sugar irregularities. When somebody has their blood sugar going up and down and all over the place, and they have high levels of insulin in the system, we create a lot of inflammatory products. And that inflammation can actually damage our barriers. We can have overactive adrenals, which lead to the overproduction of cortisol. And we know that cortisol causes a weakening of the immune system. And the way that it does that is by causing damage to the barriers, our actual barriers. Poor diet. These are things that are very, very important in controlling the integrity of our immune barriers. Poor diet Heated fats, trans fats, oxidized fats are all damaging. They cause free radical damage to the tissues and they can break down these barriers. Sugar, gluten, pesticides, all of these things are things the body has to fight. Sugar decreases the number of T lymphocytes, right? It decreases the number of T cells dramatically. The macrophage levels go way down with the ingestion of sugar. Gluten tears apart. It rips holes in the gut-brain barrier or the gut barrier, but also the blood-brain barrier as well. And then pesticides, all those organophosphates, are damaging to our tissues. The gut infections, candida, they produce toxins like lipopolysaccharides and others that are damaging the gut lining, that barrier. And then, of course, stress, which is overactive adrenals and stress go together, but somebody can be under stress, but be at the opposite end of the spectrum. But stress is going to create a whole cascade of chemicals that can be damaging and weakening to the immune system barriers. Another one is the prenatal environment. When mom has food allergies or intolerances, then the baby is more prone to getting the atopic diseases, autism, asthma, eczema, and others, right? So baby is much more prone when the prenatal environment is such that mom's continuously eating her own food allergies. And it's said that within the first 6 years, kids that are exposed to antibiotics, so in that early stages of development, that they have a breakdown of their immune system and are like many times over more likely to have conditions that are atopic in nature, the asthma, the eczema, the autism. So those are really important. And then finally, food allergies. And, you know, it's interesting because it's like the straw, the chicken and the egg with food allergies, right? Because food allergies happen because the immune system is doing its job. But the food got in the wrong place. The food broke through that barrier. But when there's poor digestion, when there's the ingestion of gluten and other allergens, then it causes inflammation and exacerbates leaky gut, which causes an exacerbation of the food allergies. So it's a vicious cycle and really needs to start with improving the diet and the gut health and also the stress levels and all the rest. So it's this system of when we're working on it, yeah, we want to identify some of the underlying factors so we can have the person remove them. So we got to get rid of the causative factors, and then we want to jump in and help the person to repair and stop some of these vicious cycles. The next area where things can go wrong, where the immune system can break down, is at the cellular level. So we talked initially about at the barrier level, like the mechanisms that the body has created to keep the outside world from invading. This is actually at the cellular level, things that damage and go wrong at the cellular level. Well, let's look at vitamin D again, right? Not enough vitamin D prevents T cell activation. And when we looked at what the importance of T cell is, right, we have the T regulators, the T killers, the T suppressors, and they all have to be working in the right harmony in order for the immune system to be functioning properly. So the deficiency of vitamin D will prevent that T cell activation. When we have insufficient T suppressors, then we get damage to innocent bystanders. So decreased T suppressors can be an issue in something like an autoimmune disease where the body is attacking a particular antigen in the blood, but it's overdoing it and the T suppressors aren't coming in and say, hey buddy, let's hold this off, we're okay now. And then we keep shooting out these cytotoxic processes, cytotoxic meaning toxic to the cells. It can kill and damage the cells. And then the innocent bystanders are whatever tissue happens to be in the way. So if we're attacking gluten and we're around the joints, in the joints, or if we're attacking gluten and we're near the thyroid, then the innocent bystander gets attacked as well. We could also have too many B cells. Too much natural killer and cytotoxic T cells can damage healthy tissue. So if we have too many B cells, especially those B memory cells, then when that invader is seen again, then the body will overreact to it and can actually damage things on a cellular level. We can have too much natural killer cell produced. Too many cytotoxic T cells are produced as a result, and then it can damage even the healthy tissue that's in the way. So the body gets overreactive. That can be damaging healthy tissue that just happens to be in the way. When we have too many antibodies are made, they can tag the innocent bystanders like the thyroid. And what people don't understand is that there's this coding of proteins. So proteins are what get attacked by the immune system. So I want you to really be clear in your language when you're speaking to people so that you sound like you really do know what you're talking about. And everybody's throwing out, oh, I'm allergic to vitamin C, or this person's allergic to this or that or the other thing. You cannot be allergic in the true sense of the word of the immune system overreacting to anything but a protein. Because that's what we make the antigens to. And it's actually, it's interesting, but we're making the antigens to just the three, maybe a little bit more, but most studies say three amino acids at either end of that protein string. So it's possible for, say, the streptococcus or the gluten to look like, at the tail end, to look similar to the thyroid or to cells in the joints, right? So that's what can create an autoimmune type of a process. When we have parasites and also food allergies, they increase interleukin-4. And that causes the overproduction of antibodies, which gets us into a situation that we just discussed. We, of course, have the cross-reactivity, the similarity, right? I just said that it looks similar because those end amino acids look similar. You know, maybe there's a leucine, glycine, and tryptophan at the end of this particular antigen, and that's what the antibody has memorized. And then, oh, wow, look at that. The cardiac myocardial tissue has that same leucine, glycine, and tryptophan at the end. And it goes, oh, I'm going to attack it because it looks similar, right? And then, of course, when the body is attacking non-harmful protein, that's an allergy, and that happens when the cellular level has gone astray. So how do we assess the immune system? Well, there's a number of ways. First of all, get really good at questioning the person. Get really good at asking the right questions, doing a good interview, having them fill out forms that give you a broad sense of their current situation, their past history, their diet, their exposures, their specific sensitivities. Their history is very, very important. How is it presenting? Routine blood testing, really important. The CBC is the portion of the routine blood test that will tell us the most about the immune system function, in particular white blood cells, and we'll go into more detail on that shortly. Then we have the overall blood chemistry, not as detailed, but there's inflammatory markers, CRP, homocysteine, sed rate, and there's others in there that can indicate the globulin counts, etc., that can indicate that there's a problem with the immune system. But then there's specialized blood testing. We don't do the specialized blood testing all that often, but I've done these things in situations where we just really need to get to the heart of it, that the normal stuff isn't really cutting it and we're not making as much progress as we think, or we've hit a wall, right? We've stabilized and this person still is having inflammation. So we can look at their interleukins, IL-4, IL-6, IL-16, and the cytokines and see what's actually going on. We can look at complement. We can look at the T helper cells, the ones and the twos, and we can look at the ratio between them. The other thing that's part of the immune system testing is looking at food sensitivities and gluten testing. And so we'll look at those in different ways of testing them. I haven't found a particular one that I love, that I feel comfortable with, that I feel is always accurate. So I try to work as much as I can from history and from doing elimination diets, but there's times when that's not getting you where you need to go. Person's made a lot of the changes, taken things out, and they're still having symptoms, and then we can run food sensitivity tests and gluten tests. I don't run gluten tests as much as a lot of doctors do because I just really can sense when a person is sensitive to it. And most of the people that I work with will be open to it. But the people who aren't open to doing a gluten-free test or diet as a trial, I'm going to run some gluten testing. And there's some specific ones we'll get into more detail on. And then finally, this fatty acid testing. We have a whole module on fatty acid testing, but we'll introduce it, I think, in part two of this immune assessment module. And we'll go into more detail about it, and we'll give you examples of why it's done, how it's done, and how you can interpret it. And what's the situation when it really helps? It does help. Very good testing. I really like it in terms of assessing the status of the immune system. This is an oxidative stress questionnaire. These are questions that show that there's stress on the person, that there's oxidative damage. Some people call it rusting. I know Dr. Mark Hyman likes to call it cell rusting. That's oxidative stress, is when the body is basically there's free radicals, sensitive species going around going, okay, we got to stabilize. And they're damaging typical good cells. And we look at oxidized fats as being culprits, trans fats as being culprits, certain foods as being culprits to this oxidative stress. And there's certain nutrients, and you've known them as antioxidants. So I'd highly recommend that you take this questionnaire and you print it out. You can put it on your own stationery. You can give it to people and see if they're in an oxidative stress situation. So some of the questions, I won't read all of them, but you can read the slides and get those. But somebody that feels fatigued a lot, that doesn't get enough sleep, right, that consumes less water than they need to, doesn't exercise on a regular basis, eats in restaurants a lot, those people are going to be much more subject to oxidative stress. So I recommend that you look at this and really assess what their level of oxidative stress is so you know how to address it in terms of the immune system. In terms of the things that slow down or damage the immune system, you want to make sure you know these things and you ask people about them. There's certain things that really affect the immune system, and if the person that you're interviewing and they're trying to help is got these things going on, you want to know about it so you know how to address it. With sugar and trans and heated fats, MSG, pesticides, preservatives, infections, allergens, artificial flavors and colors, processed grains, acid-forming foods, inflammatory foods, cortisol, and low thyroid function. We're going to end part one of immune system assessment by looking at a chart of the T helper cell support system, so to speak. And the reason I'm including it here is because we're looking at the way that we can assess the immune from the historical perspective at this point. And I like to use this particular chart, and I welcome you to do the same, in order to assess where a person might have a breakdown of T1 or T2. And so what we look at is this list that is particular substances, natural substances, foods, and herbs that support each of the T helper, T helper 1, and T helper 2 systems. And so the way that you can use this slide, this chart, is to ask questions, right? Again, you can give them a chart and you can ask them to circle the things on this chart that make them feel better and that make them feel worse or are neutral to their situation, to their symptom picture. And so or you can ask them and just doing a question and answer with them. So do you ever find that any of these make you feel better, worse, or the same? Do you ever feel like you feel really good when you take astragalus or echinacea or mushrooms or licorice or lemon balm? Or you feel really bad, you've had a bad reaction to any one of those? What about things like caffeine, a green tea extract, grapeseed, pine bark, white willow bark, lycopene, resveratrol, pycnogenol, those are all TH2 support, whereas the first group were TH1 support. So if you ask the person these questions and say they say, oh my God, I absolutely love my medicinal mushrooms and my licorice root. Whenever I take them, I feel phenomenal. On days I miss them, I don't feel as good. Then you're going to suspect that I have a TH2 dominance. And when you give them the TH1 supporters, they are going to improve. And that's what they've found out. On the other hand, if you find out that they say, oh my God, I can't take echinacea. Every time I take echinacea, I feel like my head's going to explode. I get really tired. I just don't feel well. It exacerbates my symptoms. It's possible that they have a TH1 dominance. And what you're doing is exacerbating that dominance. So you're going to want to avoid with that person those Th1 dominant pieces, but you're also going to suspect that's what's going on, right? They have a Th1 dominance. On the other hand, if they say, wow, I feel really amazing when I drink coffee, I just can't think about giving that up, coffee or green tea, or whenever I take these particular resveratrol or pycnogenol, I feel phenomenal, then you might suspect that they have a Th1 dominance and the Th2 things are calming them down. So the way you use this chart is to say, well, if the Th1 things make them feel better and or the Th2 things make them feel worse, then they probably have a Th2 dominance, right? And it can be either or both. The more it is both, the easier it is, the more obvious it is. The opposite, if they say, oh, this Th2 stuff makes them feel good, Th1 stuff makes them feel bad, they probably have a Th1 dominance and you're exacerbating it, right? So this is just a really cool chart. So we're going to end here. And what we've done here is given you, number one, an overview and a review of the way the immune system works and all the different components. We reviewed some of the ways it can go wrong. And then we started to look at how are you assessing it based on your knowledge of how it works, your knowledge of what can go wrong, and doing a good history. So the things we've given you in this section related to oxidative stress and various habits that they have that might be hurting their immune system, and then the Th1, Th2 dominant. In part two, we're going to start looking at the blood chemistry and the CBC markers, some of the basic ones and some of the more advanced ones that you can use to help to discover if this person's immune system is in good shape. So until next time, enjoy.